Jordan.
Susan.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you, darling?
I'm just doing fine. Back in Texas.
Back in Dallas.
Back in Dallas. Great to be back. What's been going on?
Not much. My wife is about 18 weeks pregnant.
That's crazy.
So I think we're like halfway there.
That's insane.
Yeah. So that's exciting, and I have a lot of cardio to do today, as you know.
We're recording this so we can avoid going
down. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Just started delaying it as much as possible before
dinner.
Yeah,
you do. You have an incredibly crazy workout today.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not my design. It's Alex Viata, who, huge shout out to him. I've learned a lot from him. Not least of which, really, how adaptable the human body is. Mm-hmm. Seeing the amount of cardio that he's been having me do, but still maintaining my strength is pretty crazy.
I was going to ask you actually about that. You're lifting how many days a week now?
Between 3 and 4, depending on the week. Usually 3.
And that's what he programs, right?
Yeah, he programs everything for me. So mm-hmm. I hired him. And, I regularly hire coaches. Usually mm-hmm. like once a year, mm-hmm. I'll hire another coach to, like, I've hired Paul Carter. Mm-hmm. I've hired Alex Viata. I hired Brian Cron. Mm-hmm. I've hired a number of coaches just to do my programming, just because I learn every time I do it.
Yeah.
And I think it helps me be a better coach when I do that. But so much, I know you and I both get questions about, does cardio ruin your gains? Does cardio make you lose muscle? Does cardio make you like more fat? Whatever it is, like, there's so many myths out there about cardio. And I've worked up to it over time, but if someone told me that I could be doing like this amount of cardio and not lose strength, I would have been like, I don't know, that's a little bit much. Mm-hmm. But it's been great. Like, I've been doing a lot more cardio specifically for my health and jiu-jitsu performance. And my strength is great. Like,
how is your hunger with all of this?
Oh, I'm so hungry.
I bet you
are. I've been eating like crazy.
Have you?
Yeah, I've been eating like, but I've actually lost a little bit of weight.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I've actually lost a few pounds. It's like, it was funny because in the first month of working with him, and I'm not tracking calories, I'm not doing any of that, I'm just eating whenever I'm hungry, which mm-hmm. is very often. But I told him I lost 4 pounds in that first month, and he was like, that's a little bit more than I wanted to see, because the goal isn't fat loss, the goal is just purely performance. I'm not doing nutrition with him. It's just, and he was like, that's a little bit too quick for what I want, so deliberately eating more just so like I don't lose as much mm-hmm. weight, because I think if I lost more weight, then it would affect my strength. Mm-hmm. So I'm eating an ungodly amount of food, just like, because I'm always hungry, and I'm doing so much cardio, which, you know, it does raise, like, if someone does want to lose weight, do cardio for your health, but don't do so much cardio, because then that will massively increase your hunger, and you'll probably end up putting yourself in a surplus or not losing weight because you're trying to get that deficit through cardio, as opposed to, and that will increase your hunger dramatically.
See that with running all the time, all the time, especially distance runners mm-hmm. who have to go on the long runs, and then they're really hungry. Of course, you would be, right?
Yep.
And then you overeat, but you really don't burn as much. I mean, it just goes back and forth into that cycle. And I think someone pointed out to me once, you ever notice the different kinds of people that run endurance events, kind of even from the perspective of what they look like
yep.
compared to the sprinters or the shorter, more intense stuff? And I think it's for that reason, right? Mm-hmm. And since I've been riding the bike more, I notice my hunger is up too. It's really fascinating because strength training, that never caused me to be hungrier.
Yeah.
And I know for a lot of people it does. It just, I was just never one of those people. But so this was new for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so I want to be careful in how I manage that. But it's really been interesting.
When I was doing powerlifting and my volume was really high, I would get very hungry after my lower body days, mm-hmm. never my upper body days, mm-hmm. but lower body days I get hungry, but the hunger I get from cardio is significantly more.
Yeah.
Like I've never gotten as hungry as I am now doing this much cardio. Yeah. Like, strength training has never stimulated hunger this much mm-hmm. ever, which, you know, it could be interesting. Like, it's interesting for people who want to lose fat, like, hey, do cardio for your health, but don't overdo it because that will probably stimulate hunger too much. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, potentially people who struggle with gaining weight, I could see, and this is actually, you see this in the literature, some people who struggle with gaining weight, having them do more cardio to increase their appetite. specifically so that they eat more and they can gain weight. Because sometimes they're not hungry enough without it. So getting them to expend a little bit more energy, increase their hunger, and then focusing on nutrient dense or calorically dense foods will help them gain weight, even though they've added cardio, it's just because they needed to stimulate hunger.
Do you think, I mean, all of this kind of stems from people viewing cardio as a tool to lose weight.
Correct, which is the flawed way to view it. That's not what it's for.
Yeah, and that has been something that you and I have talked about a lot recently, just in exercise in general, the relationship with exercise piece, and how we look at it to drive that fat loss car. It needs to be the one leading the way, and it really isn't. You know, it, and even if you use the example of, you know, you get on the treadmill and it says you burn, you know, that whole I burn 300 calories, you'll eat 300 calories in probably a minute, 2 minutes.
Easily.
So even just from that, you know, perspective, you will be chasing your tail constantly. Yeah.
And it's funny because since we've been talking about this more, and I've said things like cardio is for health, not for fat loss, there's always people who misinterpret that and they say, well, but cardio can help with fat loss, you know? And I'm like, well, I understand that.
Right.
But what I'm saying, it's not that it can or can't. That's not what I'm saying. It's what it should be used for.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, yes, if especially like for smaller people, like smaller women especially, but even like smaller guys like myself, where adding in some extra cardio, like maybe 30 or 45 minutes of extra cardio can be helpful if you're already eating very few calories, because it can help you put into a further deficit rather than trying to reduce your calories more, which can be very difficult if you're very small already. But the issue is when you focus on cardio as a fat loss method, then you will probably do less strength training than you should, do more cardio than you should, and you'll end up increasing your hunger, and you'll develop a bad relationship with exercise and food, in that you'll only eat a certain food if you think you've earned it by exercising and burning a certain amount of calories. When the reality is, you should use cardio as a form of way to improve your health, your heart health, improve your mental health, emotional health, get the endorphins raised, just make you feel good. And as a side effect, if you lose fat, cool, if that's your goal. But that's not the purpose of it.
It's a bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the bonus.
Exactly.
It's the bonus. You know, and we've been doing a lot more with this in the inner circle, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And have a really cool challenge coming up in April, a cardio thing, which is totally new for us.
We're really excited about it. Yeah, I got a big new, it's a steps and a zone 2 cardio challenge. There's literally zero high intensity interval training.
Zero.
Which I think it's important to clarify, because you and I get questions all the time. Is the inner circle good for beginners? Mm-hmm. Is it good for people who are just starting out? It's like, it couldn't be better for a beginner. If you've never, if you don't know where to start, you don't know where to begin, you just want to do something to improve your health and fitness, this is it. Especially this like walking zone 2 challenge. It's not high intensity. It's just purely based on let's get you healthier and moving.
Yeah. And get you being consistent with something.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. We're super stoked about that. And then we'll be plugging in every month, you know, some cardio training for everybody as well.
Yeah.
So kind of a whole new look.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's fun. This is what I mean by, it's one of the reasons why I like to hire a coach, because I always learn when I do that and it changes the programming that I have for other people.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm excited that we're doing this.
Yeah, me too. All right. So we're going to do Q&A again, just like normal.
Love it.
Got questions. So let's get to it. The first one, how to say no to certain foods without demonizing it when it will conflict with their calorie deficit?
How to say no to certain foods when it will conflict with their calorie deficit?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm assuming maybe, let's say for example, this person is eating 1,800 calories a day to be in a calorie deficit, and they're at 1,500 calories already for the day, so they've only got 300 calories left, and they want to have, I don't know, we'll call it 3 slices of pizza, which would put them over their calories for the day. Or even probably just 1 slice of pizza, and maybe it's like a loaded pizza, and it's over that 300 calories.
Could be, yeah.
So the reality, so number one is you have to understand that you're not going to be making any meaningful progress in this single day, right? Like this one day is not going to make or break your fat loss progress. So let's say you go over your calories today. Cool. That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the pizza that was bad. It was like you just went over your calories based on everything you had that day. But let's say you go over your calories that day and you enjoy the pizza, but because you did that, that allowed you to stay more consistent for the remainder of the week. That would be better than saying no to the pizza and then feeling like bad and restricted and then binging several days later.
Yeah.
So it's people are too quick to look at a single food in isolation and blame that for their lack of progress, blame that for their poor relationship with food, blame that for why they're not losing fat, any number of things. It's never any individual food. It's a culmination of your choices over time. Just like no one ever got skinny from having one salad, no one ever got fat from having one donut. You have to remember that. It's never one individual food at one individual meal. Just like no one ever got jacked from one amazing workout, just like no one ever lost all their strength from missing one workout. It's a culmination over time. So it's too reductionist to look at one meal in isolation in one day's of calories and just say, well, this food is bad. That's not how it works.
Yeah, I think people want to look at the day-to-day, like they get too involved with the scale moving this way one day and the scale moving that way one day, and this pizza is going to make me now lose all my progress one day.
Mm-hmm.
When really it's about what you do most of the time. And the fact that you had pizza, you didn't ruin anything. It's not about being perfect anyway. You know, I mean, and I think it kind of, a lot of this just comes back to that thinking that we have to be either all on,
mm-hmm.
and there's no wiggle room, or we're completely off the rails.
Correct.
You know, and life is kind of in the middle
there. It absolutely is.
It's neither one of those. It's about getting away from that short-term mindset, essentially.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, next question. Best barbell exercises for beginners. Just got one for my home.
That's a great question.
I think it's a great question.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever been asked. I've just like been asked best exercises, but never best barbell exercise for beginners, which is sort of, it's interesting. If I'm talking about a beginner, I wouldn't start a beginner on a barbell,
mm-hmm.
to be blunt. Like, I would start a beginner with, number one, body weight. Like, I would make sure they can do a body weight squat. I would make sure they can do a body weight lunge.
Mm-hmm.
I'd make sure they could hip hinge properly. I'd make sure they could do a push-up. And it doesn't have to be a full push-up from the ground. You could do elevated push-ups, mm-hmm. with your hands up, or push-ups on your knees. Those are totally fine. But doing good push-up, mm-hmm. technique. I'd make sure that you knew how to do a good dumbbell row.
Mm-hmm.
And a good plank.
Basic stuff.
That would be for a beginner. That would be where I'd start.
And I don't know if she means a beginner to a barbell.
Right.
Or
right.
A beginner, period.
So I would say that's where I'd start with any beginner,
yeah.
those movements. Then I would go, if we're going to go, let's say you have all those mastered. You've got the push-up technique down. You've got the squat. You've got the hip hinge. You've got the row. You've got the plank, all that. If we're going to a barbell, probably the first thing I would have you start with is a sumo deadlift. I guess the first place I would have, mm-hmm. you begin. I would start with the sumo deadlift before we're doing a barbell squat, because for a barbell squat, it's a little bit more technique intensive. It requires a little bit more stability and mobility. It's a little bit scary because you got the bar on your back. So I'm not going to start with that. Before I get you to barbell squat, I'm going to have you goblet squatting pretty heavy weight,
yeah.
before I move you over to the bar. But for the sumo deadlift, that's pretty easy to learn the technique for that. It's literally, once you get the hip hinge down, it's just you bend over, grab the bar, stand up. That's literally it.
Yeah.
So that would be the first move that I recommend for a barbell. I would also probably barbell Romanian deadlift.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely would be another one of the first ones I'd recommend.
Thinking that. Yeah.
I would do a barbell bench press before I do a barbell overhead press.
Mm-hmm.
A barbell overhead press, especially if we're just thinking about a standard bar which weighs 45 pounds, for some people, they can't do an overhead press with a barbell.
That's tough.
That's a lot of weight.
It is.
Especially if you're a beginner.
Yeah.
Most people can bench press the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Overhead press is harder because it's vertical. You have smaller muscle groups working. It's basically just your shoulders and triceps. Whereas bench press is shoulders, triceps, and pecs. So it's you have the stability of lying on the bench press, which makes it a little bit easier. So I'd say start with the sumo deadlift, start with a Romanian deadlift, start with a bench press. Those are probably the three best. Oh, and then an inverted row as well, mm-hmm. for your back, which is technically a barbell exercise because you're using the barbell, but you could do it in other ways as well. But I think those four are probably the best four that I would recommend.
No,
to begin
I
with.
Love all of those, and it makes perfect sense. I think starting, if you're a true beginner, like you said, starting with basic stuff with body weight and everything, but graduating to a barbell can be scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be really, really, really scary. So have someone to help you. And I love starting with sumo deadlift. I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's much easier to learn than conventional. It's easier on your lower back. There's less risk of injury.
Yeah.
So I would definitely start with sumo before conventional.
100%. Love it. All right. Is insulin resistance a real issue regarding weight loss?
So we'll say this. We have to start by prefacing we're not doctors and we're not nutritionists. So we have to preface by saying that. We'll start with the, is insulin resistance an issue? Yes, it is an issue.
It's real.
It's a real issue that if you have it, you need to speak with your doctor. It can be a real issue with diabetics. It can be and is a real issue. That being said, if your doctor has not diagnosed you as insulin resistant, and if, in fact, if they've said you are not insulin resistant, then you don't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's really important, because a lot of people will see a video on TikTok or a video on Instagram, hear someone talking about insulin resistance, and they'll be like, oh, that's me.
I've got that.
I've got insulin resistance. I'm insulin resistant.
I've got that.
And you've never spoken to your doctor about it, and you have no, you don't even know what insulin is, how it works. You have no idea, oh, I'm insulin resistant because some fucking schmuck on TikTok said you are. That's not how it works. So talk to your doctor, get blood work done, and see if you are. If you do have insulin resistance, number one, it's important to understand that you can still lose weight. Even if you have insulin resistance, you absolutely can.
That's so important.
Yeah.
People think it's over.
It's done. No. Same thing with PCOS or hypothyroid, any of it. Like, it's you can still lose weight. You absolutely can. You might have to get on some medication, but if you can get your calories in check and you can work with your doctor, like, you can absolutely still lose weight. And I guarantee that's what your doctor is going to tell you to do. He's probably going to tell you, you got to get your body weight in check, and here's how we can do that. For anybody who does not have it, it is irrelevant for you to be looking into this.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely and utterly irrelevant. If you want to stay up to date with your doctor and keep your blood panels done, absolutely couldn't recommend that more, so you're aware of your health and what's going on. But if your doctor said you are not insulin resistant, then you don't need to worry about it.
Do you think that people use this insulin resistance or PCOS or any other condition as okay, well, this is okay, it's not on me anymore, you know, it's not my responsibility anymore, it is something else,
yeah,
that's at play.
So here's the thing, we've had a number of people in the inner circle, PCOS,
yep,
hypothyroid,
yep,
all this, and it's funny because they've come to the inner circle saying, my doctor told me I have PCOS or I have hypothyroid or I have both, and I might as well just not try and lose weight because I can't anymore. So but then they go with it, they do the inner circle, they lose weight, and they're,
mm-hmm,
like, oh my God, like,
yeah,
I didn't think this was possible. So I think part of it is on the individual in that, like, they can use it as a justification not to try. But like in the individuals we've seen, their doctor told them they shouldn't try.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's a big problem, that doctors are literally telling people there's no point, you can't do it anymore. And that's a big, big, big issue, because if, like you and I have spoken about self-efficacy a million times,
mm-hmm,
if they don't believe in their ability to succeed, then why would they try in the first place?
Exactly.
So if your doctor is giving you misinformation saying, well, it's not going to work for you, like, you need to find a new doctor. Because I know plenty of doctors who know the truth about this and who say and understand that just because you have PCOS or hypothyroid or both, you can still lose weight. You need to get on medication. You need to get your hormone levels checked. You need to make sure they're normalized. But once that's in check and in place, you absolutely can still lose weight. It's not a lost cause. And I think some people are more quick to take the victim mindset,
mm-hmm,
and they're more quick to say, well, it's just done. It's never going to work for me. And I think there's two parts to blame. There's the part of maybe the doctor or the informant side saying, why bother? And also the side of the person who's being informed and saying, you know what? Maybe they said, I can't do it, but fuck it, I'm going to show them.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to take responsibility to do what you can.
Yeah, you do. I've had a lot of people reach out to me recently about being told by various fitness professionals, whatever, that they want, you know, there's no point in you trying to lift super heavy weight because you're not going to be able to build that much muscle, you know, at this point in your life. And I'm kind of like,
what is wrong with you?
Yeah, I don't get it. And so I've taken that attitude that you just said, you know, F you. No, I can, actually. And I have. And I think no one's special here, but it does take work. I mean, any of this, whether you have insulin resistance or PCOS or you want to grow muscle at a later age in life, I mean, it's not going to be, yeah, I'm just going to try every so often and give it, you know, a half-assed kind of effort.
Yeah.
All of it's going to require effort, you know, and I think sometimes that's where people think, oh, it doesn't work, you,
yeah,
know, because they don't hang with it anything long enough.
And I know you know better than anyone. I mean, your whole book, you know, you can get fit at any age. People use age as an excuse to not try certain things.
Yeah.
But it's not even just fitness. It's everything.
Everything.
The reality is, as you get older, literally everything is harder.
Yeah.
everything. It's learning a new language, starting your own business, making new friends, like
getting up in the morning,
getting up in the morning. Everything is harder as you get older.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you don't want to do something, that's fine. Just say, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
But don't use age as it's just not going to work for me anymore because, no, that's not true. You might not work for it, but that's different. Your age is not the definitive factor here.
I tell everyone, you have a choice. You can be a victim or a victor, you know?
I mean,
it's one of the two,
yeah.
You know? And the cool thing is you get to decide.
You choose. Yeah, it's up to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Question. I have a terrible relationship with food. Where do I start to fix it?
It's tough just because there's so many potential reasons why someone might have a bad relationship with food. And even within a bad relationship with food, there could, like, I don't know what specifically their relationship is. Like, do they have disordered eating habits? Are they just like, maybe are they scared to step on the scale? Are they scared of individual food groups? What's going on? Just without any more context, it's difficult, but I'll say, let's just say, for example, their poor relationship with food is, we already did the one about like being scared of individual foods and how there's no such thing as a good or bad food. So let's just say this person has a terrible relationship with food and they can't seem to eat healthy.
Mm-hmm.
They can't seem to just, they know what to do, but they're not doing it. I think for me, that's one of the reasons why I came up with the 1-2-3 method, just because like it's so simple and straightforward, and because it doesn't limit what you're allowed to eat, it just adds in some easy things to eat. So for example, like for the 1-2-3 method, it's make sure you're having one big ass salad every day, make sure you're having two pieces of fruit a day, and then three bottles of water. And as long as you get that, it's not all you can eat and drink, but I want you to just baseline include those things every day. If you still want to have pizza, have pizza. If you still want to have lasagna, have lasagna. If you have whatever, just go for it. But you have to have one salad, two pieces of fruit, three bottles of water. If you have that every day, then you're getting a really good base to begin with. And you're starting off with, you're building the base of good habits. And this is something that I see a fair amount of people who, like, they know what to do. And we're actually gonna, I think we're making a video course on this for the Inner Circle this month. People who know what to do, but they just aren't doing it. And if that's the case for you, the best thing to do is to start with one small thing rather than starting with a bunch of huge things or even one huge thing. Just pick one thing you're gonna do really well at and make a promise to yourself and don't break that promise.
Yeah, I feel like people that need to fix their relationship also want to lose weight. They also want to do this. They also want to do this. They want to do it all, right? And if you peel back the layers to all of that, none of the other stuff's going to happen if that relationship with food isn't where it needs to be.
Correct.
Or at least in a better place than maybe where it is now. And so as we were talking on our live today to somebody about having to focus on a different priority for a while, the priority could be for this person, focus on your relationship with food first, with the 1-2-3 and all, and that kind of thing, and get confident and feel good about that.
Yep.
That's your first step.
Yep.
You know, and then maybe you can add in something else. You know, get back to monitoring calories of a meal or two meals or something like that, and work your way back.
Yeah.
You know, it's taking things one chunk at a time.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. And then you set yourself up for success.
Yep.
Cool. Okay. A question about the Smith machine.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so excited. I love the Smith machine. How much does the Smith machine account for? I think they mean weigh.
Okay.
How much does weigh? They had to use it for overhead press and probably doesn't know how to calculate. Do you just calculate just the plates for that or do you add in?
Yeah. So for me, it honestly doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like just use the same consistent number every time. So a standard barbell weighs 45 pounds. The Smith machine bar obviously doesn't weigh 45 pounds because it has assistance to it, but I just pretend it does.
Mm-hmm.
Because then when I put two 45s on each side, that's a total of 135 pounds. I don't care if it's actually, like for example, let's say you step on the scale and the scale that you step on says you weigh 150 pounds. But you don't act, let's say your true weight is 165 pounds, but the scale says you're 150. As long as you use that same scale every day, then you're going to get a consistent reading as to whether or not you're losing or gaining or staying the same. So I don't care if it's the exact right. I just care that it's consistent. Mm-hmm. So for the Smith machine, I pretend the bar is 45 because every real bar is 45. And so that way, if I add 10 pounds, then cool. I know I'm at 100. If 10 pounds to each side, that's 155 pounds. And this isn't a competition. It's not like I'm trying to like go to the Smith machine Olympics and they're like, oh, you're cheating. That's actually like only a 20 pound bar. Like it doesn't fucking matter. Yeah. It's just for my logging purposes.
Right.
And it's easier for me to say it's 135 than it is for me to like, okay, well, I'm just only 90 pounds because that's how much is it's. That's just how I normally track weight on a bar. Yeah. So that's it. So I pretend it's 45 pounds.
Plate math.
Yeah, plate math.
I mean, and if this person's not used to plate math, then just do the plates. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
To your point, it's all relative. If you have two tens on each side, okay, you have 20 pounds on this side, 20 pounds on that side, cool. Call it 40 if you want.
Correct.
You know, I mean, and then the next time, maybe you're going to try to get 45 or whatever. It's all relative, so it really doesn't matter. Like, it's not like cheating. I hear this word a lot. Is it cheating to call it 140, 135 when it may not be?
Correct. Like, you're not, this isn't a competition.
The police aren't coming.
Yeah, no. It's an easy way for you to track. So just whatever you do, track it consistently in the same way.
Yeah. Just do it the same way.
Yeah.
And by the way, we both love the Smith machine.
Yeah. Machine's amazing. There's been a lot of hate towards it. I love it.
I absolutely love it. Okay. Another question. Curious about farmer's carries. What are the benefits, muscles, and muscles that are worked?
I have a love-hate relationship with farmer's carries. Yeah. I did them yesterday.
Oh.
I love them because there are so many benefits, and I hate them because they're so freaking hard and it's such a simple exercise.
Mm-hmm.
The benefits are extraordinary. I mean, number one, just from a pure strength perspective, you're picking up something heavy and you're walking with it. It doesn't really get more quote unquote functional than mm-hmm. that, right? Being able to pick something up and learn how to hold and stabilize yourself. Massive grip strength benefits. Like if you want to improve your, actually, you know, it's really interesting. They say this. My mom does that all the time. My mom says it all the time. Like, who's they, mom? In research, looking at all-cause mortality, one of the major factors that researchers will measure is grip strength.
Really?
So grip strength is one of the major, it's not a cause, but a major tell in terms of if you are going to be able to live for longer. And
really?
Yeah, so as you age, your grip strength, and it's just a way of testing your strength, right? Mm-hmm. Just a way of testing, because like they're not going to have someone really old deadlift. But your grip strength is a good test of how strong you actually are, and the stronger your grip strength, the more likely you are to live longer. Obviously, that's just one tell. Like your blood pressure is massively important as well, and all these other factors. So it's not just grip strength, but as someone gets older, if their grip strength decreases, odds are their bone density could be going down, they're going to be getting weaker, and they could be having real issues if something they fall over,
is. That makes sense.
So grip strength is actually a very good predictor, among others, of all-cause mortality. So I'm a huge fan of farmer's walks for improving your grip strength, for improving your upper back strength, for improving, like, your traps are going to feel like your core.
I was just going to say, my core always makes, I feel like I'm going to throw up a lot of times.
It's brutal, especially if you do a single arm farmer's carry, which is my personal favorite and least favorite because I think it's the hardest, but also probably the most beneficial. A two arm farmer's carry is probably the best from a maximal strength perspective, but a single arm farmer's carry I think is better from more functional perspective. You get more conditioning with it because once one side is done, you got to do the other side as well.
Yeah.
So for a two arm farmer's carry, I'll go somewhere between like 20 seconds all the way up to 60 seconds. I've done one for 5 minute once, and that was awful.
That's crazy.
But you obviously had to reduce the weight significantly for that. But for two-handed, let's say you do 60 seconds per side, that's working up to 2 minutes of going back and forth with a loaded carry, and your obliques are fried. It's amazing. It's great for conditioning, great for strength, great for endurance, great for core strength. It's just a tremendous exercise. So I would save it for the end of your workouts. That's not an exercise I would do at the beginning. Like the beginning should be a more compound move, like a squat or a deadlift or an overhead press, bench press, push up, chin up, lunge, something like that. I would save it for towards the end of your workout as a finishing type exercise.
I would also recommend if you're in a scenario in your gym where you can do this, to video yourself. Like, go set the camera down as you're coming towards it and watch, especially with a single one.
Yeah, especially
because
we tend
to lean down towards it without thinking about it. Like, we don't feel it until you actually see it. Wait a minute, I am not straight. I'm leaning over to one side.
Yeah.
And then when you pull yourself upright, it's like, oh, now I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when you do the single arm one, the cue that I'll use is, like, let's say you have the dumbbell in your right hand. The dumbbell is going to be pulling you down to the right side. So allow it to pull you down first, and then straighten yourself back up all the way to the top position in a fully erect, that's what she said, fully erect, tall position. And that way you'll feel your oblique really, really working hard to keep you upright as opposed to continuing to lead down, lean to the sideways.
I actually love that. Get out of position first.
Yeah.
And then get yourself to...
Exaggerate out of position, so then you have to re-correct to the right position.
Yeah. No, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Fully erect. Erect.
Alrighty then. Okay, intermittent fasting, is it effective?
It's so crazy to me how this is still such a huge topic.
Why is it such a huge topic?
I remember when intermittent fasting like first became a thing, mainstream wise, in like 2008, 2007, and I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be huge, and I was doing it then, and it was great, but. In 2022, I'm still shocked how much attention it gets. It's like, it's the one fad that keeps on building momentum.
I don't understand why.
I don't get it. I mean, it's a great tool. It's a tool in the toolbox. If you don't like eating breakfast, or you've got a couple of kids and you don't have time to eat breakfast, or you work a job that makes eating breakfast a little bit more difficult for you scheduling-wise, or if you're traveling a lot and you want to skip breakfast because like you don't, whatever, it's great. Cool. You don't have to eat breakfast. Just skip breakfast and potentially lunch too. But it's not inherently better for fat loss. It is not inherently healthier at all. It is the exact same as not doing it. It's all you're doing is skipping breakfast and maybe lunch. It does not have any inherent health benefits. It does not make fat loss better or easier. The only way it would make fat loss easier is if, based on your schedule and your preferences, it's easier for you to not eat breakfast. That's it. But if you like eating breakfast and you are really hungry in the morning, don't do intermittent fasting.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea. It will make it harder for you.
Yeah.
It, as long as your calories at the end of the day are where they need to be, it doesn't matter if you intermittent fast or not.
And I think people lose sight of that. For some reason, I think there's some mystique about the fasting piece. Like somehow that makes this superior.
Yeah.
Because of the fasting component.
Correct.
And it doesn't, you know? So if it fits your schedule, great. But other than that, why would you do it?
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Yeah, sometimes I'll do it like if I'm going to the airport.
Yeah.
And I don't want to waste money at airport food.
I did that on the way here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like 100%.
That's fine. And there have been times in my life where I've done intermittent fasting extensively, like for a long period of time. But I just like eating breakfast now. So I eat breakfast.
Too.
If there's a point in my life, I'm about to have a kid. So when the baby comes, if I'm waking up in the morning and the baby needs me and like I'm rushing and I don't have time, cool, I'll do fasting that. I'll intermittent fast and I'll just, my first meal will be lunch.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, like I'm fasting now. This is a total fat burning zone. You know, like, no, you skip breakfast. Shut up.
Yeah. That's it.
That's it.
I think it was nicknamed the no breakfast diet anyway.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is.
That's it. That's
essentially.
It.
Yeah. All right. If I am short on time for lifting, is it better to cut reps, sets, or cut an exercise?
If I'm short on time for lifting, is it better to cut sets, reps? Well, do not cut reps. We'll start with there. Don't cut reps. The reps are specifically programmed for a reason with a specific goal. So if, like, I think cutting reps is the stupidest idea of all of those.
Yeah.
Right? Said with love. But like that's the dumbest part. Like don't cut reps. If I tell you to do a certain number of reps, there's a real reason for that. And yes, I understand. There's a reason why I have everything programmed, but I would rather you, if you're going to cut something entirely, like an entire exercise or an entire set, rather than cutting the reps, cuz cutting the reps changes the entire goal of that exercise. So that's off the table. Don't cut the reps. If you're short on time, if I had to pick one, and I don't have to, but just for the sake of this discussion, if I had to pick one, I would say just cut some sets, right? So let's say you're doing three or four sets of something, do one or two sets. And that way you still get all of the movement patterns in, you still get all of the rep ranges in, you do everything, you just do a little bit less of each one. I think that's probably the best option.
I do too. And plus, you may even be able to go a little harder with those two, you know,
that
you do instead of the four or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, I think that's the best alternative.
And there have been times where I've been in a rush where I'm like, oh shit, I'm late for this meeting, and I'll just run out without finishing the last couple of exercises. But if I know ahead of time I'm short on time and I can plan ahead, I'll just reduce the total volume by reducing a couple of sets.
Yeah, I've done that a couple times. And also, I mean, I've cut out the last couple exercises and caught them later.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
a good point. You can do that.
I wouldn't have anybody want to, don't overthink it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because whatever you're going to do is going to be far better than you would have done by not doing anything. So
it's funny. A lot of people ask, I'm sure you get this question a lot, like, can I split my workout in two? So I do a little bit in the morning, a little bit at night.
Yeah.
That's totally fine.
Yeah.
In fact, if you look at the workouts of some of the best Olympic weightlifters of all time, especially the Bulgarians, they were notorious for this. They would do their heavy lifts in the morning, then they'd go back and they'd rest and eat, and then they would do their accessory lifts later in the day. These are like some of the best lifters to have ever walked the earth. The only thing I wouldn't do this with is let's say you're doing 20 minutes of cardio. I wouldn't, like, specifically, like, zone two, like, I would, or, like, I don't know, maybe you're doing sprints. I wouldn't split up your sprints or your a small bit of cardio in two. That doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would, like, for your lifting, it's totally fine. If you're doing, like, steps, that's totally fine. You can split your steps up however you want throughout the day.
Yeah.
You can do that. It doesn't matter. But if it's, like, if you've only got, like, if you're doing 20 minutes of zone two or something, I would try and get all the 20 minutes done at one time.
Yeah.
But like steps doesn't matter. Lifting doesn't matter. You can split it up however you want.
Yeah. Totally agree. Okay. Is it necessary to be in a calorie surplus for 8 months? I don't know. This was a very specific number. Eight months to fix a broken metabolism.
Let me read this one. This is one of the strangest questions I've ever seen.
I put it on my stories. I already answered.
Is it necessary to be in a calorie surplus for 8 months to fix a broken? Oh, a surplus. Okay, got it. Okay. I thought they said deficit, which I was like, wow, that's so odd.
Fix that broken metabolism.
No, odds are your metabolism is broken to begin with.
Exactly what I said.
Did you say that?
It's exactly what I said.
People are really upset. And again, I can't blame the people who've been misinformed, because there are so many people out there talking about how people are breaking their metabolisms.
Yeah.
And it's infuriating, all this fear-mongering around the idea that, like, oh, you've broken your metabolism and you need to reverse diet or you need to whatever, like, you have metabolic damage, da-da-da-da-da. It's really...
buzzwords.
Oh, God. Does it exist? Yes, it does exist. The likelihood of you actually damaging your metabolism is so unbelievably small, you have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, even let's say you do damage your metabolism by some like crazy, let's say you were an unbelievably strict dieter, and not just a strict dieter, but you were unbelievably consistent with being a strict dieter. And I mean, it's not like you just ate 1,200 calories for a little bit. I mean, you lost your hair, lost your menstrual cycle, you had real physiological issues you probably had to see a doctor about.
Extreme.
This is metabolic damage. Yeah. This is not like, oh, I've been a dieter on and off my whole life. No, that's not metabolic damage.
Mm-hmm.
That you could have psychological repercussions as a result of that. But physiological metabolic damage, you would know.
Yeah.
You would know, and your doctor would be involved. It would be a real issue. So in terms of that, odds are you don't have it, unless your doctor is saying, hey, you've got metabolic damage, which in which case you're probably not going to be asking someone random on Instagram to tell you how to fix it. You're going to talk to your doctor.
You have a serious problem and the doctor needs to
Correct.
Take over.
So in terms of let's say your metabolism has slowed down because you were in a deficit for a while. Well, first and foremost, that's normal.
Mm-hmm.
That's a normal part of being. It's not a bad thing.
It's not damage.
It's not damage. Just because your metabolism slowed down doesn't mean it's damage.
Yeah.
When you gain weight, your metabolism increases.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, again, that doesn't mean your metabolism is now better because you gained weight. It's not like people are gaining 25 pounds and like stoked about it because they've got a higher metabolism now. It's like,
yeah.
No, you've got more body mass, so now your body requires more energy in order to function.
Yeah.
That's what it means. So when you have This is why for smaller people, they can't eat as much. Like myself, I'm 5'4", I'm about 150 pounds. It's like, I can't eat as much as a guy who's 6 feet and 250 pounds because I have less body mass than them. So it doesn't mean my metabolism is damaged because it's lower. And if I go on a cutting phase and I go to 130 pounds, my metabolism will decrease. And that's normal. It's not damaged. It's just as I lose weight, I need less energy, so my metabolism goes down. So it's sort of a rant on top of the question, but you know, if you listen, 8 months is a completely arbitrary number. I'm not sure where they got that from.
Not sure either.
But if you want to bring your metabolism back up, honestly, just go back to maintenance. Go to your maintenance, your metabolism will come back up. And if you go back to your previous weight, then yeah, your metabolism will go up even more, but you'll probably gain the weight back that you didn't want to have, unless you get it through muscle, which would take probably years of strength training in order to do that.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. I think this, it is just fear mongering. There's so much out there. I get that metabolic damage, broken metabolism every other day about something.
Yeah.
And it's the way out. It's the thing to blame.
Yep.
For maybe not being as consistent as you were too, right? People will blame that for not being able to lose weight anymore.
Yep.
When no, it's probably that you just need to keep going. You need to be more patient. You need to just tighten the reins a little bit maybe here and there. You know? I mean, I don't know. It just, it's an easy out.
If you think your metabolism is broken, go to your doctor and ask to get a metabolic cart test. Have a blood panel taken and have them, if you don't believe us, just go to your doctor and get a blood panel taken.
Because then you'll know either way.
Then you'll know. Exactly. Yeah. And odds are your metabolism is totally fine.
Yeah. Mine sure was. When I thought it was broken. Okay. Do you hit a step goal daily? Do you have an intentional step goal?
I do have a step goal. I don't hit it daily. So my step goal is 10,000. Mm-hmm. That's what my watch is programmed to. So far, I'm only at 2,300. Today, we'll definitely get to 10,000.
Oh, you certainly will by the end of that workout.
Yeah. But for example, yesterday I only had like somewhere between 5 and 7,000. Mm-hmm. So I'm not 100% consistent. I'm definitely at least 80% consistent with it. And oftentimes, like for example, yesterday I only got somewhere between like 5,000 to 7,000. Today I'm probably gonna be closer to about 15,000. So like it will offset that a little bit. So I do think, I'm hesitant to say like total steps at the end of the week is most important, because I don't want someone like not doing any steps and then just on the weekend they try and get like 100,000 steps walking in. That's a really bad idea. Because that's how you end up getting injured and doing something stupid. I do think having a daily step count goal is a really good idea. If nothing else, it's a reminder of, hey, get up and move. That's what we're designed to do.
Yeah.
That's what we're made to do. That's what keeps us healthy. It's what the longest living and healthiest people in the world do on a consistent basis. But even the longest living, healthiest people in the world, they had days where they probably didn't move that much. That's fine. It's not about what you do on one day, it's about what you do most days. So yeah, I have a daily step count goal of 10,000, but I'm probably about 85-90% consistent with it.
That's great.
What about you?
I don't give myself a goal. I'm coming more from the perspective of movement goal.
Mm-hmm.
Every day.
Okay.
Now. And from a cardio perspective, from my heart issue now, and just from my hip point of view. So my quote steps are on the elliptical now.
Mm-hmm.
And my steps would be on the bike now.
Got it, yeah.
Because walking just doesn't honestly feel that great anymore.
Yeah,
I mean,
fair.
It doesn't. It's not gotten to the point where I can't walk. I mean, it's nothing like that. But boy, the other two feel a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of... So I'm not equating like... Because I don't know how to equate... I mean, the elliptical will count steps for you.
Yeah.
You know, but the bike, I mean, whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
So if I'm on a bike day, I'm not going to have my...
Step count.
Yes. Yeah. Step count the same. But it's not like I didn't move.
Correct.
You know, so for me, it's more of a movement thing as opposed to I need 10,000. But you know, it's so funny. Somebody asked me that, and I was looking back on my health app here on my phone, and I've been over 10,000 each time, and it just kind of works itself that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
As long as you're focused on one of those, you know.
Yeah.
Then it's fine.
It's a good point, because people ask like, does biking count even though if it doesn't track your steps? It's like, yeah of course.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about like getting that. People are so transfixed on like getting a certain number. And it's like, well, the bike doesn't track my steps, so does that still count? Of course it still, moving.
No, it doesn't count.
You're moving, of course it does. I don't care if it's a bike or if you're swimming, if you're elliptical, if you're skateboarding, rollerblading, I don't care, you're fucking moving.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, for some people, the counting can be obsessive. For others, it's the one thing that keeps them going.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think everyone, and there's people in the middle, you know. You have to find whatever works for you, whatever feels good.
Correct.
That's it.
That's the questions?
It. Yeah.
That was good.
Good stuff. Let all the new people know where they can find you, if there are any out that don't know.
Yeah. I got my own podcast, Jordan Syatt Mini Podcast, which Susan is on once a month as well. And that's it. Instagram, I'm barely posting. So, you know, Instagram, YouTube.
Talking about.
Podcast is where I'm most active every week.
Yeah.
So.
Love it. Well, thank you.
I love you.
Love you too.